As America celebrated its 241st Independence Day, North Korea asserted its own will and launched yet another missile test. This missile is said to have the capability of reaching Alaska, though as yet without a nuclear warhead. North Korea's latest move comes within a week of President Trump telling the world that the era of U.S. strategic patience with North Korea is over. But what exactly does that mean in practical terms, and what options are left? Brad Gosserman is executive director of the Pacific Forum CSIS in Honolulu, an independent program of the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies. He joins us now by phone. Hi there, Brad.
Hi, Beth Ann. Good to be back. Happy day after the 4th of July.
You too, and good to talk to you. Now, we heard earlier this year President Trump saying that, you know, the North Korea's test of an intercontinental ballistic missile capable of reaching the U.S. just won't happen. We heard him say earlier in this week that, you know, our patience has ended with North Korea. What exactly is left to him, despite all of this rhetoric, despite what the Security Council has tried to do?
Well, that's actually a very good question. Everyone says that North Korea is the land of bad options, and that's been the case for a number of years, and it continues to be the case today. I think, however, it's really important that we make sure that we understand accurately the nature of the North Korean threat, that we don't exaggerate it, and that we don't perhaps paint a more dire picture than the bad one that actually exists.
What is the one that exists that you see?
Well, the North has proceeded to develop its nuclear and its missile capabilities, and the test that it conducted yesterday is, by all accounts, a significant step forward insofar as it appears to have, and most of the analysts concede, it actually is an intercontinental missile, or a missile that has the range to reach the United States. But that doesn't mean we're under threat yet. The North Koreans have not yet, one, demonstrated that they have the capacity to miniaturize a warhead to put on that missile, and secondly, and most importantly, they haven't demonstrated the ability to put that warhead or that payload, whatever it is, exactly where they want it to go. So that suggests that it's still premature for us to be hyperventilating it. I think in some cases we need to be very careful that we don't hype the threat in ways that either unnerve our allies, that unnerve the public and prompt a rash reaction, or worse, perhaps spark North Korea or prompt them to think that maybe they have more power and influence than they otherwise do.
Well, they certainly were sending a message by doing this on the day that America was celebrating Independence Day. Isn't that sort of a thumb at the nose to America?
I think we like to think of it that way, but I think we also tend to go too far in our inclinations to see everything that North Korea or any other country does as in relation to the United States. North Korea is, in many ways, testing according to a schedule driven by its own technological needs. In other words, these are tests that need to be conducted, and it was going to conduct them, hold them, regardless of the 4th of July. I would say it's just as likely that this is a way of repudiating the summit that President Trump held with his ROK counterpart Moon Jae-in last week, and it's a way of signaling to the G20, which will meet later this week in Hamburg, that North Korea is not about to be overshadowed, and its fate it will be determined by decisions made in Pyongyang, not in Hamburg or elsewhere.
I'm glad that you brought up the G20. You also mentioned a little earlier in our conversation about not escalating or hyping this to the point where it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in some ways. What do you think the stance of the U.S. should be as the G20 meets?
Well, certainly the U.S. position needs to be firm, which it is, although, quite frankly, I've been struck by a president who, you know, his tweet yesterday was actually somewhat silly in the sense that doesn't Kim Jong-un have something else better to do with his time, and maybe South Korea and maybe Japan and maybe China will take care of this. That doesn't strike me as much of a policy, and recall this was a man, too, who was convinced back when he first began discussing this and throughout the campaign that he knew and he had all the answers to these problems. So I think what we have to do is keep the pressure on. We need to make sure that the international community is united in the message it sends to North Korea, and we and our allies and partners in other countries that have a similar stake in restraining North Korean behavior are all doing their very best to ensure that North Korea is restrained. So we need to be picking up the sanctions. We need to be tightening the screws. We need to be sending messages to the North both that continued ill will and ill behavior is a threat to itself, and, however, we also need to make it clear that North Korea behaves well, that good things are possible. And that's one part of the equation that we've actually, I think, neglected in much of our discussions and conversations.
In the collaboration that you'd like to see with other countries around the world, what help do you think that would be realistic to expect from China and from Russia now?
Well, you know, China, we've long insisted and believed that the Chinese hold the key, and they don't. The Chinese can hurt North Koreans, but they certainly can't force outcomes on Pyongyang. So one of the things that China has to do is, of course, make it more difficult for Chinese companies or North Korean companies that are increasingly working in China or working with other Chinese companies find it difficult to actually conduct business. So we need to impress upon the Chinese, but more importantly, the Chinese need to understand that it's in their best interest to tighten those screws. And that's a very tough sell. Russia is a little equally difficult insofar as Russia has its own geostrategic interests, and to some degree, having North Korea continue to be a bit of a problem, not too much of a problem, but a little bit of a problem, serves Moscow's own interests as well. But Moscow doesn't have quite the levers, I think, that Beijing has in Pyongyang. But still, again, to expect either of them either to want to or be able to solve this problem on their own or even working in tandem is asking far, far too much.
Where does this leave the UN and the Security Council? You know, they've already tried with all of this. They're being seen as being ineffectual. How, if there is a way for them to come back into this with more gravitas, can they?
No. Quite frankly, all the UN can do is legitimate the actions of individual nation states. And that's, frankly, that's a UN problem in addressing any international issue. But all that the UN can do is continue to condemn these behaviors, ensure that other countries do not have an excuse for not joining the international consensus to censure North Korea and to impose sanctions, and just try to marshal, if you will, individual states to act more forcefully.
As all of this is continuing, there's also the issue of whether Americans should be going to North Korea. I mean, you can still pull up lots of sites which are advertising all kinds of trips there, and yet we've just seen what has happened in the last month or so with Otto Warmbier dying. What do you think Americans should really think about as they potentially consider going to North Korea? Or should we simply say that Americans should not be going to North Korea, period?
Well, I would say that it is a very dangerous bet to go to North Korea. You can go in with your eyes open, acknowledging all the potential risks and all the potential dangers. The problem is that the behavior that North Korea is prepared to consider offensive still goes far, far beyond what many Americans or anyone else would consider offensive. So you take very real risks. I think we have to believe that we'd like to think our tourists and our citizens are intelligent enough to calculate that on their own. So the reason for denying or forbidding Americans from traveling to North Korea would be more as a way of denying them, the North Korean government, the revenues and the funds that would come from supporting those tourists. And frankly, they're pretty expensive trips. But the danger here is that North Korea is desperately seeking leverage to engage the United States on a number of issues. And unfortunately, American citizens in their country seem to be bait. And the North Koreans have a very, very low tolerance for insult and a ready willingness to grab whatever assets it can to use them to extort or otherwise get a U.S. attention.
Given the fact that a lot of Americans may not necessarily be in that same thought space and understand that, even if they think that they've schooled themselves enough, should then the government take more steps to keep some of these companies from being able to go to North Korea?
Well, the argument would be, again, along the lines of the first rationale I explained, which is what you would be doing is preventing North Korea from acquiring the hard funds and the cash to support the government. So that would be the argument would be, of course, that we need to tighten the sanctions and extend their reach. The problem with that invariably is that if we have no forms of communication or no contact, I think there are two other issues one would raise with that. One is the fact one could make the case that some sort of exposure is probably good for creating cracks in the social system, and that maybe by meeting outsiders, North Koreans can understand better the precarious situation that they're in. The second one, too, is just that it's difficult to you then risk by just impacting ordinary citizens in North Korea, the ones that are running tour companies, et cetera, that they're going to be further damaged. Their economic interests and their earnings will be hurt, and that instead of targeting the elites that are the real bad guys, if you will, that you're actually affecting negatively the ordinary citizens of the country.
And Brad, very quickly before we go, How likely are further sanctions, and specifically targeted toward what?
I would say, number one, there's absolutely a better chance of further sanctions. Certainly the United Nations will push some, but they will always be targeted. That's the best that some of the holdouts, for example, Beijing and Moscow, are going to agree to, that they will demand that the sanctions be focused on individuals that somehow or other are helping North Korea advance its nuclear and missile program, so that we can identify, the U.S. intelligence services and others, South Koreans, can identify companies that are specifically working on those projects, then they would be the targets of sanctions.
As always, I wish we had more time. When you're back in Honolulu, we'll sit down and have a longer conversation. Happy travels, and we'll see you when you get back.
Thanks. Always good talking to you.
You too. Brad Glosserman is the executive director of the Pacific Forum CSIS in Honolulu. It's an independent program of the Washington-based Center for Strategic and International Studies. The Pacific Forum has provided policy-oriented analysis and promoted dialogue on regional security, political, economic, and environmental issues in the Asia-Pacific region since 1975.